welcome to A Boy on the Internet, a story of young love, polyamory, and narcissism. Hey there, it's Ren. I've been telling my story, and on this episode, we reach the climax of my timeline. So if you've been listening along, we've gone from when I was 15 and met this boy on the internet up through 2022 and 2023. In October of 22 was when I had some realizations about our relationship and I was trying to make it work, but it had kind of been progressively getting worse. And so we've made it to April of 2023 when everything for real super fell apart. So what happened is we had gone to the movies with my son and his best friend. So his friend was having a sleepover with us that night, and we went to see a movie with them. And the short version is basically my spouse got super drunk in the middle of the day at this movie, which sounds like it should be impossible, but he drank two very large glasses. Like, at this movie theater, you can get a 32-ounce of beer to take into the movie with you. And they serve this really high-proof beer that they make around here. And so he had two 32-ounce glasses of this really high-proof beer. And he got just, like, hammered with my son and his friend at a kid's movie in the middle of the day. I drove home. We get home. He's still drunk while the kids are doing their kid stuff. We are watching TV or whatever. And I had something happen with a friend of mine, I think maybe a day or two before, that I was just wanting to think about and work through a little bit. It wasn't even like that big of a deal. But while we were watching TV, I pulled out my journal. You know, there's nothing else going on. So I just decided to write a little bit while we were sitting there doing nothing. And he sees me journaling, and he has had, you know, since October of 22, he's had me write him a couple of letters. He has known that I have been journaling through a lot of this relationship stuff, but in his drunken state, he like looks at it and he gets all like panicked and he says something like, "Oh my God, that's not about me, is it?" And I was so mad. And I said to him, "No, and I need you not to say shit like that." It was such a just complete disregard for everything that I had been telling him, making things about himself, him not being a safe person for me to express my feelings to. It was such a violation. I wasn't even journaling about him. But even if I was, my journal is my private thoughts. It's none of your fucking business. So I was so mad. And I basically spent the rest of that day just doing stuff on my own. Like, I was still in the house because we had the kids there and I wasn't going to abandon the plans of the sleepover. But I kept myself occupied in different rooms than Goose was in. So when I saw him later that evening, he had sobered up a little and he had completely forgotten what happened, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours prior. I was still upset and he could tell that, obviously. And so when he asked me what was going on or whatever, I had to explain to him the shitty thing that he did to me and relive that all over again and tell him why it was so upsetting. And then I think I spent whatever was left in the day still by myself, went to bed, still upset, whatever. Next morning, wake up, still upset, but, you know, trying to move on or whatever. When I see him, he had forgotten the incident, forgotten my explanation of the incident, all gone. So I had to explain the whole thing, the initial incident and me telling him the incident, relive all of that all over again for the third fucking time. And oh man, did that just break me. I was baffled. I was upset. I was so hurt. I just could hardly understand what was happening. I was so angry. I just was feeling like, man, this is bad. This is bad. This is bad. So, after dropping my kid's friend off back at his house, I spent the rest of that day, the next day after this happened, driving around and thinking. Driving is kind of a comfort thing for me. It's a time where I really can put on some music and let my mind wander. So I would drive for a while and think about what had just happened. I would stop somewhere and park. I would journal for a little while, and then I would drive some more, think about what I had just journaled, stop again when I had something new to work through, drive again, repeat. You know, I was working through what had just happened over those last 24 hours. I had been thinking about everything that had gone on since October, and then all of the patterns over the last couple of decades and how it was all fitting together and showing this pattern. And it was very clear that things were not getting better and not going to get better. It was a lot. And at some point, I decided I was done with this relationship. I finally was done. You know, it had been 24 years. There had been so many times when I thought about leaving and decided not to. And this was it. This was the straw. I was finished with him in a romantic way. I couldn't unsee all the bullshit that had happened. You know, once you see reality for what it is, you can't go back. You open that box and you can't close it. And I could see just all of the bullshit. He was never going to change. And I was devastated. So at some point that evening, I sent him a text and I said that I was going to come home after he put to bed and that we needed to talk. I wrote out what I wanted to say to him. As we've established, this is the way I communicate best. But this time I didn't even have him read it. Like, I read it to him so that it was really coming from me and from my mouth, but with a script to help me remember what I was going to say. And basically what I laid out to him was that our romantic relationship was over. I was done. And I was going to move to the guest room that we had in the basement. And I wanted to try cohabitating and co-parenting. So my ideal was like, okay, we are no longer romantically involved, but let's try to still be friendly and parent our kid together. And maybe someday after I've been able to heal from some of this stuff, we could even be friends. I don't know that I even felt too confident about that, but I was floating that out there, I think, to appease him a little bit, maybe. I don't know. There's the hope, right? There was always a hope, I guess, that he could still maybe change. And I couldn't do the romantic thing even if he changed, but maybe we could be friends. So he didn't say a whole lot that night, I don't think. He just was upset and went to bed. And I went to the guest room in the basement. The next day, he was kind of up to his normal tricks of what's always happened when we've had problems. He was bawling, crying, begging, like literally getting down on his knees. He was saying that he would do anything for me to stay. All of that stuff, the normal shit that they say to try to get you to change your mind. And, you know, every other time that had worked, but this time it didn't. It was really, when I said that the day before a switch had flipped, it was truly, it felt like that internally, even like I no longer had sympathy for him crying and begging and being on his knees. I could see that it was just his same old bullshit manipulation stuff. And so I just, you know, sat there kind of cold and stoic and was like, nope, nothing you can do. This is my decision. And he's crying, and I remember word for word, the thing he kind of said at the end was just, he goes, I blacked out and my whole life fell apart. I blacked out and my whole life fell apart. Yeah, bro, that's what happens when you are an abusive alcoholic, is you black out and you do dumb shit. And then the people that you're doing dumb shit to at some point aren't going to take it anymore. Oh, boy. So after he cried and he begged and he's putting on the whole show of like trying to get up from being on his knees and like barely being able to stand and like he's gonna faint or whatever. the whole show. We spent, the day apart or whatever. So I went up to what was our shared bedroom, and I think I was just getting some stuff out of the closet. And he came in, and suddenly he was in a better mood and a little... So that tactic hadn't worked. Crying and begging wasn't going to work, obviously. So he was trying something new. And so he was, like, pretending to be optimistic, and he literally thanked me for forcing him to be better by actually leaving. So, I mean, you know, admitting basically that he was never going to change, I guess. He said that he was now kind of excited to just be like a couple of old gays that live together, like sometimes people do. Some gay people live together platonically and raise a kid or whatever. And he's like, we can just do that. And I'm actually really excited for that. So, you know, in his brain, he kind of switched it into like, I need this to work for me. So let me figure out what I can still get out of this relationship and this new scenario. So now he's excited to be co-parents and be old gays that still grow old together like he always wanted, but just as friends or whatever. Blech. He vowed to finally actually quit drinking, which was something he didn't do in 24 years together, and a million conversations about his drinking. He never fully quit. And he was finally, he's like, I gotta quit drinking. I know that now. And so he actually quit drinking now that I finally had had enough of his bullshit. So we kind of just tried to move forward from that. I moved into the basement guest room. We previously hadn't really been using the basement, like family room area. I had just recently completed replacing the floor down there. And so finally got like furniture and a TV and stuff to make that an actual livable space so that I could have my own space that's not just the little bedroom. I was trying to be cordial. I was trying to be friendly. You know, in my mind, I wanted this to work truly for Skeletor's sake. Like, if we hadn't had a kid, I would have just left. But I was trying to think of, you know, what might be the best and easiest transition for the kid would be for us to still be in the same house so that he can see either one of us anytime he wants. So I was trying to make that work. I was even trying to kind of still spend family time together. So I wasn't really spending time with Goose alone. I was not considering him my friend at that point. I needed space. But we were doing family activities together, like, you know, certain shows that we would always watch together. We were still trying to do that. Still trying to go do things with Skeletor together. But I kept getting triggered all the time. I was really struggling with Goose's behavior toward Skeletor, which is kind of something I had always struggled with. His lack of patience, his unreasonable expectations, things like that. And previously I had been trying to manage that. And I was trying not to do that, but it was really hard when he was behaving in a way that I thought was inappropriate and I had to watch it. And mom is going to try to protect their kid, right? So it was just, it was getting harder and harder. I was trying, but it was pretty stressful. So we get to May and there is a local nerd convention that we've always gone to together. For like over a decade, we had gone every year and we had made the plans to go that year as well. So we already had like the hotel room and everything booked together. So we decided to proceed, stay in the room together. It was a suite. So there was like a room with a bed and then there was another room with a pullout couch. So I didn't have to sleep in the same room with him. It was like, you know, one of us would sleep with Skeletor in the bed and one of us would sleep on the pullout couch. And we would kind of coordinate on Skeletor and doing things with him. But other than that, kind of doing our own thing and not necessarily all being together all the time. It didn't go super well. It was, I mean, like all of this had just happened maybe 3 weeks before. So it was pretty fresh. It was, like I said, difficult to see how Goose behaved towards Skeletor. It was really hard not to try to control that situation. There was at least a couple times where I got pretty snippy with Goose because he was just being a real dick to the kid, and I at a couple points couldn't handle it. And then we had this panel that we had been doing most years when we had been going to this convention. So I'm going to talk more about this later, but short story is that we did this hobby together, basically, where we were in the style of Mystery Science Theater. We were recording commentary tracks that were riffing a bad movie. And so we would show those at the convention, basically. And so, again, we had that already planned. People were going to show up, you know? So we decided to do that anyway. And I got not very far in, maybe 10 minutes, maybe. It was like unbelievably triggering because of memories of the process of making these tracks and how stressful that was and how shitty he had been about that. So stay tuned. Future episode, we'll give more detail about that. But I was getting these memories triggered. I was like on the verge of a panic attack, kind of flashback mode, which I didn't recognize at the time because those were just starting for me, having flashbacks and panic attacks related to relationship stuff. So I tried to stick it out, and I only made it, you know, 10 minutes in or whatever. And I just leaned over to him and was like, I gotta go. And I left. And I took Skeletor swimming in the hotel pool instead. And then another pre-planned thing that we had that I tried to do anyway, well, I did do anyway, was a vacation that we had planned. It was either June or July. I don't remember. Sometime that summer, where we went to Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin. we were staying at the Great Wolf Lodge, which my kid loves. We were going to House on the Rock, which I love. This was like our first real family vacation that we had planned since the pandemic. We had already, you know, paid for a bunch of the hotel or whatever. So like, again, tried to just make it work as a Plutonic family, whatever. It was a whole disaster. Goose was like really insistent on working for part of it, which sort of had like kind of evolved into something that was not going to be a big deal to something that was very much a big deal. So like his excuse for doing it was like, you know, if he's able to be on an hour long call from the hotel room, then that's an hour less of vacation he has to use or whatever. And so before we had gone, it was, the attitude was sort of like, if we're not doing anything else and we just are hanging around the hotel room anyway, I'll just hop on this call so that I can save an hour of vacation. And I'm like, sure, whatever. But then it turned into like everything revolving around these calls. He's like, I have to be on this. You have to deal with Skeletor for this period of time. It was a whole thing. And Skeletor was being a little bit moody, I guess. I think it was just a lot of overstimulation. And like, this is the first vacation that he's been on in a while. And he wanted to do all the things all the time. And Goose was just being very unhelpful in providing parental support during this vacation. And in like classic manipulative fashion, towards the end of it, we were just laying around the hotel room on one of the last days, I think. And we were both like tired and fried and frustrated and everything. But he said kind of sheepishly to me, like, you know, I couldn't do this without you. Like just putting in that little seed of like, hey, we should keep doing this. We got to be together because I can't manage this without you. So I need you to stay with me, even if it's just plutonically. So I think by this point, I was kind of starting to understand that this wasn't really working the way that I was hoping it would. I was still putting in basically all of the effort into this relationship, even if it's just a parenting one. He was getting a lot more out of this situation than I was. You know, he was still getting all of his needs met for not having to be that supportive of a parent, not having to pay his own bills, not having to mow his own lawn, that kind of stuff. All the stuff that I was doing still for him, even though we weren't romantically involved. So he was still, it was almost status quo for him. Like, I was still doing all the things that he needed from me. But I was getting nothing. I was sleeping in a different room, and that was about it. I was still stressed all the time. He was still driving me a little bit crazy. I was still the primary support for our kid. And I was lonely. And I was miserable. In August of 23, I booked myself a little cabin for kind of a solo retreat with the plan of going, this is like a rustic cabin, no TV, you know, it's a camping situation, but with a bed and an air conditioner, basically. And I did a lot of things for myself, walking in nature, meditating, journaling, all of those kinds of things. And one of the days I had a little help from some mushrooms, which I tell you, I'm pro therapy. I go to therapy and I love it. But also, I get more clarity out of a day on mushrooms than I can get in a month or two of therapy. Like, it's amazing the way that it works for me in helping me work through stuff. And it's helped me a few times as I've been going through this process. So, you know, one of the days I sort of locked myself in the cabin, had some help from psilocybin, and that gave me the clarity that I needed and the emotional capacity to handle the realization that I needed to fully leave. The Plutonic thing wasn't working. Co-parenting wasn't working. Staying in that house was really not working. And I needed to go. I needed to separate fully. I needed to find my own place for us to share custody, you know, get divorced, all of that stuff. When I came home from that, I told him a few days later, which wasn't necessarily my intention, but I believe when I got home from that, I like got COVID right away and I was sick for several days. So I didn't tell him until after I got better from that. And then once I told him, everything changed. I mean, everything had been getting worse, but like suddenly again, another switch flipped and things really changed. And what I know now, knowing that he's a narcissist, is that that was the discard. When somebody is a narcissist, the general pattern that they go through with people is there's love bombing, there is devaluation, and then eventually they discard you. If you have stopped meeting their needs, they discard you. So before this day happened, when I had to tell him that I, for my own mental health, needed to leave and fully separate, he really seemed to care. And I thought he cared about me and my well-being, like actually cared because he loved me and because we had this life together. And, you know, if he really loved me, he should care about me being well. So that was my assumption going into this, was like, after we've been through all of this and he knows what's going on and he does care about my well-being, surely he will understand and he will continue to care and he will help me through this situation, I guess, and at least be decent about it. What I realized is that he never actually really cared about my well-being. Because he loved me, he cared about keeping me happy enough that I would continue to be his supply. Which in narcissism terms, supply is like the energy that they're sucking from their victims, basically. And it's so funny because he basically told me straight to my face. Again, I didn't realize it at the time, but he basically said, I'm discarding you. How he put that was something like, you know, hey, I've been focusing on you and what you need and how to make you happy during all of this. Now I'm going to start focusing on Skeletor and what he needs. So he said that to me, and everything was extremely different after that. So they say about narcissists that the abuse increases after the discard, and that is in fact correct, at least based on my experience. So going forward from that, it was a lot of logistics of, okay, how do we proceed? He was really determined to have Skeletor finish out the school year, or I guess not finish out the school year because he hadn't even started yet. But the next school year was starting soon. So he was very determined to keep Skeletor in the current school for this upcoming year and, you know, work towards separating, but not actually fully like leave the house until the school year was over. And he even had ideas in his head of like, maybe he could figure out how to keep the house and keep Skeletor in the same school, which I knew wasn't going to work. Like our income was not that high. So we started the process of like separating our finances because we had only a shared bank account the entire time we were together. We got a home equity loan to consolidate credit card debt and get lower interest and lower payments while we finished the school year with the idea that like if and when we sell the house in the future, that'll pay that off and we won't have to worry about it. But just as we're starting this process of separating finances, getting all of that worked out, I believe it was the day that we signed the papers to close the home equity loan, he gets fired from his newish job for the same bullshit that he got fired for, you know, 10 years prior at a different job, which made me absolutely furious. And his reaction to me being angry was kind of a clue and a good example of me starting to understand that he didn't actually give a shit about me and was just manipulating things for his own gain. I think I mentioned in a previous episode that I had started on testosterone for gender affirming care. And so when I get angry with him about getting fired from his job for some stupid bullshit as we are trying to figure out our finances, and suddenly I'm going to have to support us for who knows how long, which ended up not being very long, but I didn't know that at the time. He blames the testosterone. So we're talking about it and I'm still thinking that he cares about me and I'm trying to be honest with him. And I tell him that, yes, I am angry about this. And he says something like, you know, you might want to check with your doctor about the testosterone. Maybe that's what's making you so angry. Like, motherfucker. Fucking don't. At some point, there was a weekend where Skeletor was with me for an evening or whatever, and he mentioned to Goose the next day that he hadn't had anything to eat for dinner or something, which anyone that knows my kid knows that he is totally capable and willing to get his own food if he's hungry or to ask for food, and he didn't ask me for anything. And he probably had snacks and stuff and just didn't have like a real meal or whatever. I don't know. Anyways, Goose uses that as a way to basically accuse me of neglecting Skeletor and, you know, so kindly offering to watch him more often if I need breaks for my mental health or whatever. He's very good at offering help as a way to control a situation. So things were just like really falling apart quickly. By September, my mental health was bad. I was struggling to work full days when we were starting to get busy. I couldn't keep my space clean. I wasn't showering. I wasn't sleeping. I was having, for the first time in my life, I think, bad intrusive thoughts about not wanting to be around anymore. And I just, as the month went on, I came to understand that something had to give. I was going to lose my shit if I had to continue life as it was. And the thing that had to give ended up being work. And I decided that I needed to take a medical leave. And that leads into what I call the weekend of hell. And that is when I realized that basically everything we had been doing together was a lie. He was a narcissist, and it made everything make a lot of sense. As terrible of a realization as that is, it does offer some relief in suddenly everything making sense. So what happened is this was like the last weekend of September leading into October. I had decided I was going to start medical leave the first Monday in October. So the week before that, I was wrapping up work on that Friday and Saturday. I was sending all the emails I needed to send, submitting my request for FMLA and short-term disability, getting all my ducks in a row. And then that Saturday or Sunday, I was trying to rest after all of that. I made a couple of honestly fairly vague posts on social media saying that I was taking a leave for my mental health, saying that the main reason I was doing that was because of my living situation and how things weren't really changing. He wasn't included on these posts. Like I had, there's a, you know, the setting where you can not show it to certain people. I had done that. But of course, someone was kind enough to share it with him, which leads to him wanting to have a talk with me. Now, that is also a whole thing. When we first started going through this process, I had initially requested that our communication be done more via text. Like we were in the same house together, but you know, I'm in the basement, he is on the second floor. We can communicate via text and email was my preference. And he just basically never stuck to that. He trampled all over that boundary immediately. Anytime I would send him a text about something, he would come knocking on the basement door, asking to talk it through, you know? So that, whatever, it was either Saturday or Sunday. I'm laying down trying to rest. I've finally gotten all of this stuff wrapped up and I'm like, I can breathe finally, thank God. And he comes a knocking and is like, we need to talk. He comes down to the basement. I'm on the couch. He sits in the chair next to me and he basically attacks me immediately. Like he was yelling and accusing me of all kinds of stuff. So he was yelling at me for not telling him immediately because we share financials. Like this is literally the same day, I think, that I put in the FMLA and made the post about it and was like, yeah, I was going to tell you, but like this just happened. So he yells at me for that. He yells even more passionately about making the social media posts. And his argument is that, you know, I'm not thinking of our son when I post that kind of stuff. And then classic textbook narcissist, he accuses me of abusing him. And at that point, I walked out. There's a door. We have a walkout basement. There's a door. So I got up and I left. Like as soon as he said that, he said something like, I'm not going to sit here and take abuse from you. And I said, nope. And I left. And this is just so classic narcissism. Now that I know the patterns, he comes at me in person with, you know, no documentation, is yelling at me, treating me like shit. And then he gets to post later on his own social media how I won't communicate with him. And I'm not receptive to any kind of criticism and how I just walk out when he tries to talk to me. And this is just the beginning of him posting lots of bullshit on social media. So I think I pretty much stay out of the house that day. Next day, now Sunday, a couple things happen. So there's another thing in narcissism called flying monkeys. So that is where the narcissist is using other people to come at you. There's also a thing called triangulation, you know, where the narcissist is using two people against each other. So the next day, I had made another comment on my social media, basically saying to whomever had shared my post with him that he wasn't included on, basically saying, if you're going to share my post with my abuser, unfriend me. And a former friend of ours, like a former mutual friend of ours, attacked me in the comments saying all kinds of shit. Basically classic victim blaming, telling me it couldn't be that bad because I didn't leave the house. It couldn't be that bad because I trust my son with him. She was saying like she wants to see documentation. She's like, has he threatened to kill himself? Has he verbally abused you? Has he done this? Like she was just saying all of this shit. And she was using her own abuse as kind of an excuse to why she was judging me, which is so insane to me. Like, you were an abused person and you're gonna not believe somebody else's story, but you're gonna accuse them of lying and shit. Oh my God. And it was so convenient that they had just recently, like a couple days before that, spent the day together while my kid and her kid had a play date and her and Goose got to talking, clearly. And then the same freaking day, his sister is texting me, claiming that she's genuinely concerned, which I'm putting in air quotes, but talking to me again about how I shouldn't be flaunting our business on social media. I'm not thinking of our son. When she was expressing what she was claiming to be genuine concern for me, I was trying to assure her that, you know, I'm doing all the right things to take care of myself, that I'm going to therapy, and that, you know, I'm just in a bad living situation and I need some time. And she was saying stuff like, well, I don't know how good your therapist could be if you're still having all of these issues. Man, this whole family is toxic, is what I've realized that I got pulled into. So after that went down, one thing after another, and I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And I stumbled basically upon education about narcissism. I say that I got blessed by the TikTok algorithm. I had already been getting a lot of like self-care and mental health related videos, but suddenly after this stuff happened, I start seeing videos about narcissism. Like, bless the creators out there that are sharing their experiences and sharing information, because I hadn't realized. Like, I had had passing thoughts in the past about, like, he has some narcissistic tendencies, but I didn't realize, like, full-blown textbook narcissistic personality disorder, for sure, and narcissistic abuse. So I start seeing these videos about narcissism and everything is sounding super familiar. And that leads me to reading some books about narcissism, which again, everything is sounding really familiar. Those books were really helpful because they were giving strategies also on like how to deal with a narcissist. Because at the current time, I'm stuck in the house with this person. So then over a few days of like devouring as much information as I could, I have the realization that, oh yeah, he is super a narcissist. He's never been who he seemed to be. He doesn't care about anybody but himself. And I am not safe here. And I panicked at this because things had changed so quickly. I mean, even since August, like things had been pretty rapidly declining. And then in the, you know, the span of 3 or 4 days, things just went so badly so quickly that I was really terrified to be there. He had never physically abused me. He had never really like overtly verbally abused me. It was more manipulative and coercive and stuff. But I kind of had a good understanding of what he was capable of if he decided not to be nice. Throughout our time together, he would share some somewhat disturbing thoughts that he had about people he didn't like. And it never, I mean, it bothered me maybe a little bit, but it never super bothered me because I was thinking that, you know, I'm the person for him to be open with and to share these thoughts with, so that he doesn't actually do these things or whatever. And then I also thought he would never think these things about me because I assumed that he loved me and cared about me. But I knew the kinds of things that went on in his head. And now I understood that he didn't love me and he no longer cared about me. So I was really scared about what he could do with me being in that house. So my nervous system is going full throttle, constant panic. My whole body was shaking. It was bad. But I was also in like crisis mode. So a lot of us neurodivergent people are pretty good in a crisis. And so I kind of just flipped into like, well, let's do this. Let's plan. So I packed a go bag. I took out emergency cash. I was calling the domestic violence people and seeing, you know, how they could help. I was looking for a lawyer. As soon as my kid was at school in the morning, I left the house and I didn't come home until my kid was home. It felt safer in the house when my kid was there because Goose didn't generally do as much shitty stuff when Skeletor was around. I was not sleeping, you know, laying awake all night. It was rough. I did get in contact with a lawyer and was talking through some options. I knew that Goose was determined to stay in the house and have Skeletor going to the same school. So I had been previously thinking that if I needed to not be in the house with him, that I was going to have to leave. And then it occurred to me that why should I have to leave? I should make him leave. So me and my lawyer were discussing getting a protective order and getting him kicked out of the house, which I ultimately decided not to do for several reasons. Probably most importantly was I didn't want to traumatize Skeletor in that way. And I also knew, based on the type of like covert abuse that was happening, that it was going to be really hard to prove and document and get a judge to even agree. So I just decided not to bother. I was meeting with the lawyer, getting all the paperwork ready, and I get an email from Goose pleasantly informing me that he was able to get us filed for divorce. So he filed first, which in the end doesn't make a big difference, but on principle really fucking irritates me, pisses me all the way off. But it is what it is. And we kind of just move forward with divorce stuff. And I'm trying to be in the house and see him as little as possible. Moving into November and December, things calmed down a little bit. My panic eased a little bit after some time of him not doing anything else like that. It didn't escalate. He's not a dumb person. And he now had a lawyer who was advising him on proper ways to behave in a divorce, I'm sure. So he was being cordial. He was finally doing communication by text and email. And he mostly left me alone for a while. So I was starting to come down from constant panic mode. During this time, we worked out a shared time arrangement with Skeletor. So rather than us just both being in the house and he gets to go to whoever, which meant usually me, so I was still being the primary parent and not able to get any rest or healing time for myself. So we worked out like a week on, week off arrangement of like, yeah, we're both in the same house, but one parent is going to be in charge. And Skeletor will know that if you need something this week, you go to mom. Next week, you go to dad. I had gotten a little bit of money from an old pension plan, which I used most of to pay for the lawyer, but did have a little bit left that I bought an old cheap camper off of the Facebook marketplace to get some breaks from actually being in the house. Because just being in the same house with the energy and with being in the basement and hearing him walk around all the time, and him being able to come knock on the basement door whenever he wanted was pretty stressful. So I bought this camper, which I bought it in winter. So I didn't take, the idea was like come spring, I was going to take it out camping. But in the wintertime, it was in the driveway and I was hanging out there a lot, which was nice to get breaks and have a more separated space. That was helping. The holidays were fairly drama-free. We talked to Skeletor and let him know that we were going to be getting a divorce and moving houses shortly before Thanksgiving. That went pretty well. Thanksgiving was fine. Christmas was fine. It was pretty drama free. So that was nice. So I got a couple months to recover a little bit from the October bullshit that happened. Then things changed in January a lot. Again, like just when I think things can't get any worse, they keep getting worse. So early January, I tried to return to work. My FMLA and short-term disability had ended at the end of December, because that's 12 weeks. And I was feeling not super confident about going back to work, but I was willing to try. And I needed a couple of accommodations to feel like I could do it and not completely lose my mind. You'll just have to trust me when I say these accommodations, based on the job that I was doing, were completely reasonable and would have barely had any interruption in the work that I was actually doing. But my company disagreed and refused to meet them, refused to even budge really on a compromise. They offered me a couple of very small things that were not helpful at all and were kind of a joke. And I basically had to say, you know, I can't return under those circumstances. And so they fired me. They called it a separation or whatever. And the HR person did HR people things and was like, we encourage you to apply for another job in the company. You're eligible for rehire. You can apply for long-term disability, like all of that bullshit. And since that happened, the abuse has been increasing pretty significantly. Goose loves money. It's like his favorite thing. It's always been extremely important to him. And so, you know, when things with Skeletor weren't really an issue, when talking about the house wasn't really an issue, suddenly having money stuff was a big issue. So since January till now, as I'm recording this, it is late March 2024. I applied for long-term disability in January, and I still haven't gotten approved yet. So I haven't had a paycheck in almost 3 months. I sold the camper that I bought to pay a month's worth of mortgage. And since then, I have been door dashing a little bit. I have tried selling some art, little things like that, just to make a tiny bit of money to like put gas in my car. But Goose has been responsible for having to cover the mortgage and the household bills, which so far he has been able to do, I should mention. Our mortgage is current. Our bills are paid. There is money in our shared account. We're doing all right. But he thinks we are like days away from homelessness, I think. He's very dramatic about it. So he keeps harassing me about money. He's sending me emails and text messages frequently, sometimes multiple times a day, asking about the status of my disability, asking if I have done this or that I said I'm working on, making suggestions about, like, you know, he can help me sell this or that, or have I thought of this or that. He is tracking any money that he's put into our shared account over and above what we originally agreed to. Like, when we separated our finances, we laid out, based on our incomes and our bills, how much each of us were going to put into this shared account for the bills. So he's now tracking every dollar that he puts in over and above that original amount, with the expectation that I pay him back either with disability funds once I get them, or with taking it out of my half of the proceeds of the house once we sell it. Overall, even outside of kind of the direct abusive actions, I have been doing worse mental health wise, just because getting further into the divorce process is super triggering. Packing up and getting the house ready to sell has been super triggering. Like, I had a couple of quiet months, November into December, because there was a lot of time between when divorce was first filed to when we actually really needed to start filling out the paperwork and talking about the mediation and the plans and stuff. But now that that's actually going and we're going through the process, super triggering, both from my relationship to memories of my childhood and when my parents got divorced and when my life fell apart after that. Thinking about Skeletor and not wanting him to go through divorce in the same way that I had to. So it's all been a lot. He keeps invading my space, keeps messing with my stuff, like just in little ways that on the surface would seem kind of benign. But knowing him and the way that he needs to control things, I can tell he's doing it to be a dick. Meaning, like, we put our house on the market a few days ago, and we've been getting ready to show it. And the basement is my space. And so I was putting myself in charge of, I will get the basement ready to show. I spent a Friday to a Saturday overnight with a friend. And that Saturday was an open house. And during the time that I was gone before the open house, when I came back after the open house was over and I went back to my space in the basement, I saw that he had just come down and like messed with everything. Just like took some storage bins that I had and put them in a different place. Took a blanket and laid it over the table like a tablecloth. I have this nightlight that changes color when you push a button, and I had it on like rainbow and he had changed it to white. Moving some stuff around on shelves. Just completely unnecessary things that he's justifying, I'm sure, on like, oh, this looks better and I'm trying to get this ready to show, when it looked fine before and he didn't need to fucking touch anything. During this time, I didn't want to, and I didn't for a while, but I have had to start kind of monitoring his social media posts because he is on a massive smear campaign and is posting lies and a bunch of exaggerations and bullshit on his Facebook. I'm sure he's doing the same on like TikTok or wherever else he is, but Facebook is the one I've been monitoring. He is making it sound like I have completely just like fucked off and abandoned our kid. He is blaming me for the debt that we were in, plus our financial situation right now, talking about how I'm not working and refusing to give him money, but not mentioning that it's because I'm disabled and I don't have any money right now. And just generally making me sound like I'm a really terrible person that's not treating him correctly. And I can see on those posts that a lot of people that I considered friends are buying into the bullshit and are offering him sympathy and are supporting him, even though I have previously said that he has abused me. So I have had to disconnect from a lot of people that I've considered friends and lost most of my community that I had previously. Like, I have a small handful of people that know what's going on, that have heard my side of the story and believe it, and are there for me, and I am so grateful for them. But outside of them, I don't really trust anybody that is in the community that we used to share and is now basically his community, because I don't feel safe with any of those people anymore. I can tell that. So when he discarded me in August and said he was turning his focus to Skeletor, he's very clearly love bombing Skeletor now and acting like the greatest dad on the planet and posting about how he's the greatest dad on the planet. Obviously, he is pretty clearly using Skeletor for emotional support. My poor 8-year-old kid is definitely having to take on a lot of his dad's drama. It's also been really hard for me to be in the house still. I mean, it always has been, but as, like I said, the logistics for the divorce and the sale of the house are ramping up, he just always has something to talk to me about. So when I'm in the house, I try as hard as I can to just stay in the basement, because if it seems like if I go on the first floor, he always knows and finds me and has something to ask me or say. So I guess we've kind of moved away from the time where he was actually abiding by the text and email rule and is once again approaching me in the house when he wants to talk to me about something, including like asking me about money and shit. Then I had a flying monkey attack again recently after I started this podcast. His sister emailed me. So this is the same sister that texted back in October out of such great concern. So she emailed me again, claiming concern for me, having learned about the podcast, which I'm assuming this happened because I posted about it on TikTok and Goose's nephew is on TikTok. And so my assumption is that nephew saw it, told sister about it, and then sister confronted me. She sent me this long ranting email accusing me of all sorts of shit. Again, talking about how I'm not thinking about our son when I post stuff like that, that I am just trying to drag Goose through the mud. She accused me of just trying to get famous on TikTok or whatever. Again, told me that I'm not getting good enough therapy. And then she accused me of, I think she called it parental alienation syndrome or something, and then accused me of being a narcissist. Which, classic narcissism. They always accuse you of doing the thing that they're doing. But this time he did it through his flying monkey, which she claims that he didn't know that she was emailing me and that I wasn't supposed to tell him because he wouldn't be happy about her sticking her nose in our business. Which, one, I don't know if I believe that he didn't know. Or that at least they wouldn't have been talking in a way. He is really good at manipulating people to do things where they think that it's their own idea, but it was actually him putting the idea in their head. So I'm sure some conversation happened where he was like, oh, I sure wish somebody would say something, or some bullshit like that. So she's since been blocked and all of that, but that was a stressful day. I forwarded all this stuff, like all her email, all of these social media posts, texts, and emails I've gotten from him and stuff to my lawyer, just to kind of document everything that's happening. And that kind of brings us to today. So like I said, we're in the last few days of March. We have our house on the market. We have mediation for divorce scheduled in about a week, I think, maybe a week and a half. It's in early April, which at that time, divorce could possibly be settled, but I don't really trust him to not be a dick, especially about the money part. So I'm going in mentally prepared to have to go to court. And if we have to go that far, it'll be this summer, probably. Now I have the fun challenge of our house is on the market. It's a good house. The market is ramping up here for the spring, so it's pretty likely to sell fairly quickly. And so we're looking at a close probably in May, maybe. And I still don't have my long-term disability approved, and I don't have an income. So my plan of buying another house may or may not actually happen. I'll have a chunk of money once we sell, so I won't be homeless, but I may have to live in an apartment or something for a while, which I really, really, really have been trying to avoid this whole time. Like, if I was going to end up in an apartment, I would have gone there 6 months ago, probably. I was really staying in the house to save the money and just try to stick it out until I could get a house that really felt more like my own space. So we'll see. Yeah. If my disability is not approved and I can't get a mortgage by the time we close on our house, I might stay with friends for a while in hopes that it'll still be approved. Or if it's been fully denied and I end up having to pursue Social Security or whatever, then I'll just have to live off house money for a while and rent a crappy apartment or something, which I'm going to hate. But anything will be better than living in that house. So I will be onwards and upwards. It might just take a little while. Ideally, a miracle will happen. Disability will get approved. I'll get a mortgage and I can get a little cheap house that I can actually have my own space to rest and heal. Finally, after about a year and a half that this has all been going down. That's a really long time to be going through this much stress. I mentioned in, I think, the first episode, like, even my physical health just isn't good right now. I've got blood pressure issues. I'm on lots of medication. And none of that is going to get better until I get out, which I will. I just got to hang in for another, hopefully, couple of months. Okay, so podcast isn't over. I wanted to take you through the general timeline and the key things that have happened, especially over the last year and a half or so. But I do have a lot more to talk about. I have a lot of examples of the issues that we had and the things that I didn't see at the time, but were very indicative of the narcissistic pattern of behaviors. So I still want to dive into a lot of that stuff. I'm hoping that some of those will be relatable to people. You know, I have had kind of a uniquely different experience than I've heard other people talk about. So maybe there's others out there that have had experiences like mine and haven't heard about it yet. So I'm hoping to share more. for the next episodes. But I'm just going to kind of, so we're going to start jumping around in time and focus kind of just on one topic at a time per episode. I will tell you about something that happened and how it is an example of the narcissistic pattern of behavior. And we'll just keep moving from topic to topic until I feel like I've shared enough, I guess. So next time, I do plan on first diving into how all of this manifested in our experience of being polyamorous. I think that that's probably the biggest difference I have from other people that I've heard their stories, is that we were poly. And that presented a whole new set of challenges and a whole new set of ways for him to be controlling and awful. So I'm going to talk about that. I might talk about that for a couple of episodes because it's a lot of information. So if you are non-monogamous by nature or in a polyamorous relationship, that might be worth listening to because maybe there's some behaviors there that don't feel quite right to you and they could be indicative of something bigger. I don't know. Anyways, if you're interested, keep listening. I appreciate really, truly anyone who has listened to me and has stuck with me this long. This is a hard story to tell, but it's an important story to tell. I think it's important for people to hear, and I think it's important for me to say. If for no other reason than just for my own healing process to get this stuff out and connect some of my own dots and begin to heal. So thank you. I will talk at you later.